Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey, bosses, and welcome to Invest Like a Boss podcast. Today, we have a very special guest from our history, from our early iLab days. And we have Sam, who just got done with a tough challenge.
It was a prison of war camp, wasn't it? I forgot. Where did I go?
Was it a Vipassana? Because I've done that before. It was tough.
Vipassana is when you do like 10 days and your only objective is meditation and you're by yourself the entire time, right?
No, there's group ones. And actually, it was really similar. So for anyone who hasn't joined our Patreon, we have an exclusive episode in there where Sam and Derek talk about Sam's experience doing this crazy meditation. You want to just do a very like brief synopsis of what's in that episode?
It wasn't even like a meditation retreat. It's a Buddhist monastery in Thailand where monks live and laymen go to train. So it wasn't anything, it wasn't like a set event or a retreat per se. It's an active monastery that's been there since the 1960s. And it was set up specifically for English speaking practitioners to come and learn the Thai tradition of Buddhism. Because as I think a lot of people know, it's very difficult to kind of access Buddhism here because none of the monks or practitioners really speak English.
So you actually lived like a monk for those days.
Lived like a monk. And the tradition here in Thailand is called Theravada. And it's a major sect of Buddhism. It's probably 30 or 40% globally of Buddhists or Theravada tradition. They try to emulate the kind of footsteps of Buddha in the sense of recreating the conditions of his enlightenment. So that is like bare bones, living in a forest with no of the worldly possessions or attachments that we have.
Well, sleeping on a hard floor, I'm assuming as well.
Sleeping on a wood deck outside. Luckily, we had mosquito netting, but the noises that come from a forest at night are terrifying.
Yeah. Well, congrats on getting through that. If anyone wants to kind of hear the whole story, you can join our Patreon. And we have a bunch of exclusive episodes there, including Sam's monk journey, but also our kind of warnings for what investments we think may fail next in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, the foundation for that is just that, unfortunately, Pear Street, which many of you guys know by now, has filed for bankruptcy protection. So that kicked off a lot of discussion, both on Patreon and Boss Lounge, about where things stand. So Johnny and I recorded a more in-depth episode just talking about our portfolios and where we see potential problems ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So alternative investments in general, we've liked them because it's never good to be 100% in any one investment, whether it's real estate or the stock market, even if it's, you know, something that seems a bit safe. I like alternative investments. And this week's guest is actually kind of an old one where we've had on their former branding, the former company, Empire Flippers, or Empire Flippers Capital. Was it twice now?
Three times, including one of the original 10 episodes. I think it was iLab 10. We had their CEO on, Joe. And I know that Empire Flippers as a whole has been very popular with our listeners. And more recently, Empire Capital, which is this episode where we find out they've rebranded and separated themselves from Empire Flippers, now going by the name of Web Street. So we're going to be talking about the performance of the rounds and also the opportunities that lie ahead.
So for anyone who doesn't remember those episodes, you can take a look on the archives of Invest Like a Boss. But Empire Flippers.
That's a good name.
Yeah, it actually would be. Actually, it would actually almost be a it would fit. It would fit because they help people buy and sell. They're kind of like an online marketplace. They help people buy and sell online businesses. And I guess now they're focusing on just helping investors invest in them. So let's take a listen, and then we'll come back at the end in the outro. And I'm actually going to talk about my personal experience because I am an investor. I've invested an okay amount of money with them. And I'm going to talk about my personal portfolio and if we would invest in the upcoming rounds. So stay tuned.
I'm excited for that. Hey, Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, how are you?
Doing great, man. It's wow. With regards to Empire Flippers, we had on one of the founders, Joe Magnotti, a couple times. originally back iLab 10, I think, and Mike V more recently back in iLab 170. Check my records. Yeah, 170. So, man, it's great to have you on. It's kind of an extension of a long-going dialogue that we've had with you guys for, I guess, more than 7 years now, almost going on 8 years. And I think it's been almost 2 years, more than 2 years, actually, since we've had you on the last time, and that we were talking specifically about Empire Flippers at that time. So imagine things have changed. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Yeah, that's a pretty wild, quite a long period of time there. And I could say, yeah, I personally have enjoyed you guys on iLab and then, you know, even prior to working for Empire Flippers. And yeah, a lot has changed. So excited to get into it and update the audience.
Yeah, it's such like an interesting way to keep track of time. We always use like iLab episodes as a reference point to the past. And we are always surprised by how quickly time goes. Because I remember last time you guys were on the show, and it certainly doesn't feel like 2.5 years ago. But that's life, right?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That is life. And that's we can get into all the changes and whatnot, but that's right around the time that I actually joined Empire Flippers. Empire Flippers Capital was right around that 2.5 year mark. So it lines up perfectly.
That was going to be my first question, was just how long you've been working with Empire Flippers and what I guess brought you into or attracted you to Empire Flippers when you joined them?
Yeah, so just a little bit of background on me. My name's Kyle Kudereski. I like to say I'm an engineer turned investor. I went to engineering school and got into corporate America. Like I said, I listened to iLab for years, and enough corporate America, decided to save up money and become an investor, got into vacation rental properties. But at that time that I was looking for a side hustle, I was considering purchasing an online business. Didn't end up going that route, but kept an eye on Empire Flippers and the industry as a whole. And then I actually looked at investing with Empire Flippers Capital right around that 2.5 year ago mark, and instead ended up actually applying and joining the team and have been with them ever since.
Now you're residing, we caught up a little bit before here, but I believe you're residing in Georgia, fellow man of the South.
That's right. Yeah. So I went to school and grew up in Tennessee, and I live in St. Simons Island, Georgia, just south of Savannah.
Okay. So Savannah, I think a lot of people know, but how did you end up on the little island south of Georgia, south of Savannah? And what was the name of it again?
It's St. Simons Island.
St. Simons.
It's about halfway between Jacksonville and Savannah, about an hour each direction. And I came here out of engineering school for an interview, had never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. And it was an overnight interview, and ended up, you know, driving around the island, exploring the beaches. And I was like, well, if I do get this opportunity, I'm definitely going to take it. It's a pretty cool little spot.
It sounds like, if you didn't know the area, it sounds like it could either be a really beautiful, like golf cart based, you know, resort island, or it could be a total swamp.
Yeah, it's probably more of the first. There definitely, we drive a Jeep around and a lot of golf carts and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of the Spanish moss, live oaks, kind of swampy, marshy kind of beauty, similar to Charleston and low country.
Sounds lovely, man. So onto the business stuff. I've been hearing a lot about WebStreet. What is the name change?
Yeah. I guess so just very quickly, you know, most people are probably familiar with Empire Flippers, the brokerage. So approaching almost half a billion, I think 450 million in businesses brokered over the last 10 to 12 years, which goes way back to what, like when you were talking about 7 years ago interviewing Joe. So a lot of growth there. And we continued to hear that people wanted to invest in these businesses, but they didn't have the time or skills to run the businesses. So that started, after hearing that enough, we decided to start Empire Flippers Capital, which was a way for people to invest passively in online businesses. And we can get into the models, the model and how it works and everything. But that was about 2.5 years ago. It was a standalone company from the start, but there was a lot of shared resources, right? It made sense to kind of test the waters, find product market fit. We shared tech resources, we shared marketing, and of course the Empire Flippers brand name. Plan was always separate completely and be a standalone company. And so the beginning part of this year, we completed that separation and rebrand to WebStreet. And the reason for that is multifaceted, but obviously if you're doing investing in a brokerage, there can be some conflicts of interest. Also deal flow. We know how huge this market is, and investors continue to want to invest. We need to be able to purchase from other brokerages besides just Empire Flippers and many other reasons. But that's WebStreet, and we've completed that separation maybe 6 months ago or so now.
So will the previous rounds that were done under Empire Flippers Capital now be under the WebStreet brand and fund?
Yep, that's correct. So all of the funds are their own LLCs, and they're still going to be managed and everything under WebStreet.
Got it. So for new listeners or people that haven't heard the previous episodes, obviously more detail on exactly how Empire Flippers, now WebStreet, actually works. But it'd be good to give kind of a rehash or an update on exactly what the model is and how you guys bring the opportunity to retail investors.
Yeah. So for anybody that doesn't know, I mean, Empire Flippers and online businesses in general, they're set. Several different monetizations, and those include Amazon FBA, Amazon Kindle, KDP, content, affiliate marketing, SaaS businesses, and more. So we make it possible for you to invest in those businesses in a completely passive manner. So it's another asset class similar to real estate, fractional. I know you're involved in fractional wine, fractional art, that type of thing. It's a same or very similar model for online businesses. And what we do at WebStreet is we go out and find what we call portfolio managers or operators. We have a thorough vetting process, application process for that. We basically call it a fund in a box. So we find the PMs, we raise the funds, we oversee the acquisitions of the assets, we handle the distributions, the profit distributions, investor relations, taxes, et cetera, so that portfolio managers can do exactly what they do best, run and grow the businesses.
So typically you guys would buy, let's just use an example. You buy a content site and you're buying that from typically like an individual. These would be relatively small businesses, small operations, maybe like a solo entrepreneur on up to maybe how big of scale would be the teams that you would acquire these businesses from that would go into these funds?
Yeah, you're pretty much spot on, but it can vary from $100,000 up to, you know, $1 million plus businesses. And with that, the team size can vary, but could be anywhere from a solo entrepreneur to somebody with a team of 5 or 10 writers, or maybe if they're in the FBA, Amazon space or direct space, maybe they have a warehouse team or a logistics team or something like that. So some of these do have teams in place, and some of them add teams as they go or add team members as they go. But yeah, generally small business, anywhere from 1 to 10 or so team members.
Got it. And then when you acquire the assets, are you taking over the operations exactly as they are with the teams in place, or do you bring in new team to manage these assets?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Let me maybe take a step back and kind of address the rounds and the funds. So generally we do different groups of funds in rounds, what we call them. And there might be 3 to 5 different funds, right? So each one of those funds has a portfolio manager that goes out and acquires assets with the investor money. Plus, they also put in 5% of their own money as well. So any fund might own 2, 3, 4 businesses, and they actually acquire the businesses based on the criteria they lay out to us and to investors before we ever bring them on board. So if they say, I'm going to be an FBA, Amazon FBA site, or I'm going to purchase Amazon FBA sites between $200,000 and $700,000, and my plan is to up marketing or introduce new products, then we hold them to that strategy, and they go in, they acquire the business. We oversee them, and then they start to implement those strategies. Does that answer the question?
That does. That does. So then a fund manager will look after, on an operational level, all the different assets that they go out and acquire. So they might not be physically running that individual asset themselves, but they'll certainly be looking after the performance and teams that do manage this.
Generally speaking, but they're pretty hands-on. I mean, most of the time, yeah, they may have teams in place that are in the nitty-gritty, but they're ultimately responsible for the performance of those funds and the assets in those funds. And we've had several, it's actually part of our model to bring back repeat portfolio managers. So that maybe they do one in round one, they get good returns, investors want to invest them again, so they come back a year later, that type of thing.
So I guess thinking of it from the outside, like there's got to be some type of economies of scale, efficiency. Like I'm thinking, if I'm just an individual solo entrepreneur that has an FBA business, it might take me 6 hours a day to run that business, let's just say theoretically. But if you were to create a fund around FBA businesses, you could probably have 10 FBA businesses within that fund and have a much, much smaller team compared to one person trying to just kind of run their own business, bring other assets in, right? Because they're just doing the same routine and process, but across different assets, or in FBA's case, like different products. But it's, I would imagine you gain a massive like efficiency advantage by doing it in this kind of concentrated categorical way.
Yeah, exactly. So you're spot on. I mean, it's not quite just rinse and repeat, but they have their strategies. They know what they know how they want to grow the businesses. They lay them out to investors, and then they use that strategy they implement those strategies. And additionally, besides just the efficiencies you talked about, I mean, there's the efficiencies of the money as well, right? So they may have had a few exits and they may have capital, but if we're going to go out and raise $2-3 million for them, they can, you know, grow much bigger businesses that they maybe couldn't afford on their own.
Mm-hmm. So then the real critical piece then becomes the portfolio managers themselves getting really good operators. What does that look like? How do you guys find, recruit, retain operation managers for these funds?
Yeah. So that's huge. I mean, that's definitely something where the shared resources of Empire Flippers have helped so far mm-hmm. and continue to. I mean, there's just a huge network of online business entrepreneurs that we know both from Empire Flippers and from just general online business conferences around the world. So we have operators from many different countries. And so, yeah, we really leverage that network. We go out, we have an extremely thorough application vetting process. It's a multi-step application. And then we actually have the potential managers go out and source businesses, show us why they would purchase them, do mm-hmm. due diligence, tell us how they would grow them, do the financial modeling before we bring them on board. And then, you know, the last piece of that puzzle is they have to be willing to put their skin and own skin in the game. So they put down 5% of their own money. So, you know, a $2 million fund, they're putting in $100,000 of their own money.
Wow. All right. That's not insignificant. Yeah.
No. So they don't get any salary. They get, as a part of the model, they get levered up. So they get 20% of the profits. So when the funds profit, they profit, but they have 5% of their own money in the fund.
I enjoy hearing that tremendously. Those are real numbers, right? Because the funds that you guys are raising are, what's the size? It's something like 2 to 5 million for each round.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've done, most of them are between 1 and 3. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've had some repeat portfolio managers come in and those funds fill up very quickly.
Okay. What's the history of the rounds that you guys have done or of these funds that have been completed in terms of raising the capital and deploying it and are, I imagine, still operating? Can you give us kind of a brief history of where those funds are in terms of their how long they've been operating and how many assets they have within each?
Perfect. Yeah. So we've done 5 rounds, which again are groups of funds. Across those 5 rounds, there's 13 active funds. There are a few more funds where we've returned capital because they just couldn't find acquisitions that met their criteria, which we're happy mm-hmm. to do. We're very stringent. We don't want them purchasing businesses that they don't fully believe in. Mm-hmm. Across those 13 funds, there's been over 35 assets acquired. So we've got over 35 online businesses in the portfolios, and that's about $27, $28 million raised. So
wow. And when was the first fund completed in terms of originating the money and deploying the assets?
The first one was started January of 2021. So the way this works typically is there's funds are raised 2 to 3 months. And then from the time the raising is closed, they have 90 days to go acquire the businesses. Mm-hmm. So they can spend that money, return any money they don't spend. And then the businesses are migrated. They start doing their growth strategies and stabilization. And then we begin to give out cash distribution. So I guess that's something I should have hit on earlier. One of the things Ooh. That's really attractive mm-hmm. on the asset class is that these are cash flow positive businesses. So they're not just real estate where you're waiting on appreciation. They're mm-hmm. cash flow positive from day one. So after, you know, there's always net 60, net 90 terms with Amazon and whatnot. But as soon as the funds start making money, that's distributed every quarter to investors.
Okay. Very interested to hear and look at a little bit more detail of what those cash flows look like. But before we get into that, have any of the funds, so the first fund was in 2021, so we're only talking 2 years. What's the lifespan of these funds until when you try to, I'm assuming that they're operated similar to like a real estate fund where they acquire assets and maybe 5 to 7 years later, they try to exit and then give back all the principal of the original capital back to investors, plus whatever the appreciation of the NAV, net asset value is. Still learning these terms sometimes.
No, all good. Yeah, you're spot on. So we advertise that we expect 2 to 4 year hold periods on the businesses. Mm-hmm. So purchase them, grow them for 2 to 4 years, and then sell them. We have yet to, we're just now looking at selling our first asset. So we haven't sold any yet. But that's right on track with what we expected. Now, one nice thing is that these businesses are going to sit there and continue to cash flow. If the market's mm-hmm. down or it doesn't make sense to sell the business at a certain time, then, you know, they're not required to do so, which should be seen as a positive for investors because, again, you just continue to get those distributions and sell mm-hmm. the businesses when the time is right. But we fully expect to exit our first businesses this year.
Okay. And I guess that would be something that is pretty unique to what you guys have, is you have access to a lot of buyers. So when it comes time to sell, there is sort of a market that you guys can tap into to liquidate that asset.
Spot on. Yeah, spot on. And before the separation, or before completing the split with WebStreet, we were only purchasing businesses through Empire Flippers. We trusted the businesses there. We know their vetting process. We know a lot of the buyers and sellers. And we still do a lot through Empire Flippers, obviously. But we've since started purchasing our own business, or purchasing from other brokerages, as well as private placement deals. So we can sell wherever we deem is the best place. But you're right, there's a huge network of buyers there that we're ready to tap into.
When you liquidate or sell one of the assets, like you said, you have one planned coming up. Would you then, when you sell it, would you then return that capital, that share of the capital, to investors, or would you keep it in the fund until the other assets are later liquidated?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, we would go ahead and return the capital plus plus the profits. So the profit split on all distributions, or all profits, is 2/3 to investors and then 1/3 to the portfolio managers and WebStreet, which is 20% and 10% to WebStreet. So that's the same split on all profits throughout the life of the business, as well as the exit. And of course, as you mentioned, the capital is returned first.
Okay. And approximately how many investors are in each one of these funds? Is that a detail that you guys can share?
Yeah. Yeah. Typically around 75 or so.
Okay. And if one of these funds has, say, 35 assets, so any of these funds could have maybe between 3-5 assets in them. Is that sound accurate?
That's exactly right. Yeah. I don't know the average off the top of my head. I would guess it's 3, but yeah, two to four, we definitely have one with 5. So yeah, in that range.
Well, it's kind of cool thinking about it that way. Because it's you're like diversified enough, but when it comes time to liquidate those, it's not like you have to liquidate 30 sites. Because I know the process of liquidating these can be kind of like lengthy, just with the due diligence process. I mean, any asset, right? But you know, if you're in a fund with or 3 or 5 assets, you could sell one or two of them, and you could get a big chunk of your capital back. You could get 50% of your capital back while you still cash flow the other assets.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're making my job easy today. You're hitting the nail on the head.
I'm thinking through this stuff. I mean, I'm not invested in any of the funds, but I enjoying like thinking through this asset class. And frankly, it's a pretty rare and unique asset class. I think that's why it's been so popular with our listeners, is because, you know, people want to have access to this stuff, but it's like a lot of the alternatives, really, like art, wine. It's been so hard previously to have access to it in somewhat of a controlled, stable environment that's easy to liquidate. And, you know, once that comes to market, it pops off, and like pretty much all the alternatives have. And we've had on Masterworks, Colt Wines, in, you know, you guys, I know we have a lot of our listeners that have invested with you guys. So it's unique. I know Johnny's personally invested as well. I know a bunch of Patreons are. So it's interesting thinking through this asset class, especially they're cash flow positive. Because I think a lot of people, and especially me, when I think of like the web and when I think of technology, I think of like no cash flow.
Right.
My E-Trade account. It's just like pure tech plays with zero dividends. But with these, the fact that they cash flow positive, it's great. Like when in times like this, when markets are going sideways for years, real estate market seems to be on the verge of a collapse, that, you know, you 2021, like this hasn't been stress tested that much, but you guys have gone through a really bad period in technology. Like the metaverse, my metaverse portfolio is down still like 60%, right? With no dividends. So it's nice to be thinking of assets that still pay. You know, I guess we'll get into the dividends basically now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're exactly right. I mean, last year was a tough year across the board, and we were excited about the returns we were able to deliver.
All right. So I think you guys had sort of crossed a list of the fund's performance, which I'm taking a look at now. Is this public? Is this a public document, or is it like available for account holders, or how is this accessible for people?
Yeah. So I guess one thing I should have hit on before, along with the quarterly profit distributions, we send quarterly reports for each fund. So if you're invested in a fund, you know what websites that you own a part of. And you get yearly operator, portfolio manager interviews, like videos where they explain their growth strategies, all that type of stuff. Those are private to investors only. It wouldn't be good for everybody to know what sites are owned in funds. ones for competition purposes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But our overall track record is public. That's something, you know, we built a whole new platform and website for WebStreet, and we're still continuing to iterate on that. And so we're going to have this much more open. But yeah, I think I posted it in the Patreon group, and happy to share our track record. That's part of the model, is sharing the track record, sharing a public kind of scoreboard of how each fund has done, so investors can know what they want to get into in the future.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, because this is actually, looking at this, I mean, it's only been 2 years, but there's a lot of activity here. So there's already, and we talked through these points earlier, but I'm looking at fund 8001 all the way through fund 8016. So can you take us through, we don't have to go through every detail of these, but maybe the high level of each of the funds.
Perfect. So yeah, in round one, which we've hit on a few times, there's four funds, 8001 through 8006. The reason for the gap, you know, there's not six there, there's four, is some of those funds didn't make acquisitions and capital is just returned. So there's four funds in round one. There's four funds in round two. Both of those were in 2001 or started in 2001. So they have a bit of a track record. There's three funds in round three, which you're starting to see a little bit of a track record, two quarters of returns. And then round four just finished acquisitions. So they don't have anything to speak of yet. And round five is making acquisitions as we speak. So they've made a few already. So that's where the four rounds are at, or five rounds are at. Sorry. I know sometimes it's hard to just kind of hear numbers if you're driving around in the car or whatever. So let me go high level and then we go into any specific funds. So
I'm staring at it and it's still hard to follow, but it's like, because it's condensed, right? It's a lot of activity in 2 years. That's kind of like what I'm getting at. It's kind of cool though.
Exactly. Yeah. And we think it's cool too. And it really starts to stack and add up. And you see, you know, there's 35 assets here and there's all these returns and numbers. So round one, to make it very simple, round one, it's first year of distributions. Over the course of the first year, if you were in all four deals, you got 14.6% return. And as we mentioned earlier, we're pretty excited about that given the, you know, the rest of the economic environment last year, give or take. Similar for round two. Round two has four funds, FBA, KDP, and two content funds. And there was 15.4% returns over the last 12 months. And again, those are broken out by quarter. Some funds have, you'll see there's some, a few, not many, but there's some where you haven't gotten a return in a quarter. Maybe they were investing in inventory, or maybe it was just a down quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe our highest quarter to date on any fund was 10%, which is, you know, extrapolate that over a year is extremely high. So, and then I guess the last thing to hit on there is none of these take into account the actual exits of the businesses. So if these businesses are growing, they would be on track for about 20% returns over the life of the funds.
And so this is cash on cash return, which is distributed quarterly. So I'm looking at like the quarters, for instance, round one, the average across the four different funds that were in round one was 2.8% in the second quarter of 2022, 2.4% in the Q3, 3% in Q4. So these are all actual distributions that were paid out in cash to the two investors of those rounds, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So we have, as a part of our platform, we have what we call our WebStreet wallet. So the distributions get credited to your wallet. You can reinvest those funds. You can withdraw them to your bank account. You can let them sit there and build up and then reinvest or then withdraw. And yes, but they're actual cash in your WebStreet account that you can withdraw and sell.
Those are great returns. I mean, that's a great cash dividend compared to, I guess it's... So I'm in three real estate funds, and I think my average cash return, my average annual yield on those is about 6.5%. I'm in two private funds that have an 8% preferred, and then I'm in Fundrise, which it's the yield's been decreasing recently. So started off around 8, but it's sitting around more like 4. So that kind of brings down the average quite a bit. So these I would say are marginally above that 8%. It looks like the average is somewhere around 10% a year, or is it even more than that?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to just calculate off the top of the head. But yeah, for like round one, like I said, in the first year it was 14.6 across all four funds. And then round two is very similar. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we're excited about the returns we've been able to deliver. At the end of the day, that's what it all comes down to, right? Like, it's cool to be invested in websites and different assets, but returns are what we're out to deliver to investors. And really, it comes back to what you hit on earlier, them being cash flow positive. when these operators, they go out to purchase the businesses, they come mm-hmm. to us and they show us the P&Ls and they show us why they think they can grow them. And, you know, we have ultimate veto power on what assets are purchased. So if they're declining or we don't think that, you know, there's something we see as experts in the field that they maybe don't, then we'll, you know, it doesn't mean we get it right every single time, but we're very cautious and we would rather return funds to investors than buy businesses that we don't fully believe in. So that's really mm-hmm. that's really a key part of the model. And then, you know, one other cool thing I think to hit on is as these numbers start to stack and all these operators got to know each other, they're starting to do masterminds across monetizations and they're really able to help each other out with what they're seeing. And so you can imagine how that helps them compound their returns.
Yeah, makes sense. Is there any reliable way or credible way to track the NAV of these assets? I mean, I can't imagine it's as reliable as like real estate where it's sort of just like, here's the price. You know, pretty much liquid at that. How do you like, do you guys even try to measure that? Or is it just like, hey, the businesses are growing. We expect the value of the business to be increasing, but we'll have to wait and see until, you know, the market once we go to sell the asset.
Yeah, I think it's something we definitely keep an eye on and do our best. It's a little more complicated than just mm-hmm. real estate. Like you said, I'm over the operations side of our team. So we have another guy, Blago, who's over the investment side. So he's mm-hmm. much closer to that. He does all the mm-hmm. acquisitions and all the returns and whatnot. So I don't want to speak out of turn, but the mm-hmm. easiest way would be to look at like, okay, if this is a content type fund, you could go to Empire Flippers or you could go somewhere else and see what multiples are content sites average trading at right now or selling at right now. And then you would know, like, so as an investor, you get the P&Ls every quarter with your distributions and with the reports. So you could pretty easily see like, all right, ballpark, this, you know, multiples have dropped or multiples have increased.
Uh-huh.
And that makes sense. It would take a little bit of work, but you could ballpark it for sure.
That makes sense. And because there's enough sites being sold like every single quarter, then you have an actual measure of what the averages are across those categories.
That's exactly it. Yeah, we have tons of data on it.
All right. So there's a couple of comments, questions from Patreons that have both invested in some of the rounds and also Johnny. So I was thinking, I'm just going to read them exactly as they came in. And then maybe you can just comment on them as you see fit.
Perfect.
All right, cool. So I'm just going to read first from Johnny. This is just word for word. For the one that I invested in, 8006, this is me talking again, so I'm just looking. That's fund one. That's an FBA fund. It says, there doesn't seem to be any updates on dashboard since 2021. I believe there are some coming through email, but haven't seen any on a dashboard. There is also a $500 earnout refund. What's the difference between that and a distribution?
Okay, yeah, perfect. So yeah, he's correct. All our updates are going out in the quarterly report emails as a part of our new platform. It's something we're working really hard on with an engineering firm is to mm-hmm. get an investor dashboard where you can go see by deal, your returns by quarter, exactly like this graph you're seeing. But as you can imagine with the separation, it's taken us a while. It's a lot of data and a lot of numbers to get in place. So that's something we should have in place before the end of the year. But does that answer the question on the first part?
Yeah, on the first part. And then there was the second part, which is why is there a $500 earnout refund? What's the difference between that and a distribution?
Perfect. Yeah. So earnouts, this is a pretty common negotiation structure. Sometimes when you like purchase a business through Empire Flippers or another, you'll say, all right, I'm going to give you XYZ amount. If these benchmarks are hit at the 1 year mark, in other words, if the business continues to grow the way you're saying it should, or that we agree that it should, then I will pay you X amount additional mm-hmm. earnout on the purchase of the business. In this particular case, one of the businesses did not hit those benchmarks. So the capital was just returned to investors.
All right. Fair play. mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good negotiation structure for keeping, you know, some skin in the game and making sure.
And sorry, that's for the operator, right? That's for the fund manager.
Yeah. So the fund manager, when he would purchase a business, mm-hmm. he may negotiate in an earnout. And then if the benchmarks aren't hit, the money would be returned to the fund. Of course, the operator would get some of his back and then all the investors would get their percentage back as well.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. All right, cool. So let's go into a couple. That was Johnny's question. A couple of Patreon questions. Actually, this is a slightly more comments, but I think that it's worthwhile to discuss them and then maybe shed some light on your view of where things are at. So here's one from Travis. I'm in the same deal as Johnny. I think the operator is good, but there are two main problems. One, the deal was raised at peak FBA aggregator valuations. After the money was raised, the operator had something like 3 months in order to find something to deploy it into. This meant that he had to pull the trigger quickly. Unfortunately, I think it was bought at a really high valuation when it was crazy difficult to get good FPA businesses. That's the first point. Second one is, in this case, they bought three businesses and one of them had a massive logistics problem from the start, which caused a flop that they could never really recover over. Again, in peak FBA aggregator shenanigan times, they had to commit to buying a business within days. Otherwise, it would have been bought by someone else in a presumably very competitive market. I assume we'll probably break even in the end or even make a small profit, which will probably be in a year. So that's more of a comment than a question, but maybe you want to take a second to just kind of observe and make a comment on that.
Yeah, I think that's relatively accurate. Again, I'm not on the acquisition side, so I'm not privy to exactly the information he's talking about on the businesses, but it sounds relatively accurate. Anybody that's been in the online business world for the last couple of years remembers the Thrasios and the aggregator kind of mania where these Amazon FBA sites were being bought up very quickly and it very high valuations. I think that's one of the reasons it's really important, and we stress this in our models, is to diversify. So in round one, there was one FBA fund and three content sites. So I imagine the contents were purchased at much lower valuations. But the other part of that is that business 8006 or that fund continues to cash flow, and there's nothing forcing the sale of those businesses. So we could wait for valuations to go back up, or, you know, determine when the best time to sell those businesses are and continue to cash flow them at in the meantime. So Travis is probably right there. Continue to cash flow and hopefully make a profit and sell the businesses at the right time.
So it sounds like he invested in one of the, he invested in 8006. Is it possible to invest in just round one? Like instead of saying, I want to be in 8002, which is a content, fund, could I just go in and say, I want to be in all of round one across all the different funds that are in there?
Yeah, that's a great point. So at the time, a lot has changed with Web3 and EFC. So at the time, you had to pick individual funds and you could do all four if you wanted. Since round two, we've had an invest in all feature across the top of the platform, which actually we strongly encourage. Usually we give lower minimums if you invest across all funds. So yes, the answer is you can do that. And we highly recommend it. It's the click, you know, you click one button, you sign one set of documents, you're in all four funds or all however many funds are in each round. And that's something we'll continue to, continue to push.
Okay, makes sense. All right. So the next comment is from Mark Silberman. He says, I've been in on about eight different deals overall, spreading out my investment to keep it diversified. I've got a range of performances, one like you mentioned, and then varying degrees of success. Overall, I've been happy with the cash flow rolled up. There are some performing, some about in line, and then there is one that's underperformance. I think it's key to invest across the deals since it's too difficult to pick winners one by one. And agree with the prior poster. Some of the early deals were at peak valuations. I imagine more current deals are far more reasonable multiples and hopefully stricter criteria. So again, more of a comment than a question, but it seems like that is in line with what you're just saying around, you know, you want to diversify, and it seems like that's what Mark did. He's in eight different deals. So what do you think, he actually picked the individual funds, like the deals himself, or did he just use that like buy, invest across all button?
Yeah. Mark's spot on. I mean, that's exactly how we recommend doing it. Unless you have some reason that you don't want to be exposed to a certain monetization or a certain portfolio manager. I imagine he did invest in all probably in two different rounds, which would give him eight funds. Yeah, I think everything else he said is pretty spot on as well. You know, in hindsight, the aggregator mania was going on and that was a bit of a peak. You didn't know that when you were in it. The flip side of that is now we're seeing extremely good valuations for investors. So it's one of the reasons we're trying to grow our audience so quickly and grow Web3 as a company so quickly, is we think we can do really well at these current valuations and we want to take advantage of the market.
That makes sense. So in terms of the current investment opportunities, which you guys are excited about, the categories of site, I know we reviewed this on previous episodes. I'm just looking at the current funds that you guys have together between rounds one, two, and three. I would say almost half are content sites. There's FBA, KDP, which I don't know what that stands for. So you got content, FBA, and KDP. Could you talk a little bit about what, well, I think FBA is much more recognizable by most, but for KDP and content, can you just discuss quickly kind of what those actually entail?
Yep. So Amazon FBA, I think it's pretty self-explanatory, fulfilled by Amazon. KDP is Kindle Direct Publishing. So this is a monetization we've been pretty excited about as well. It's delivered good returns. So instead of, you know, these portfolio managers, instead of having to go to some huge publishing house, you can actually publish your books and things directly through Amazon to Kindle. I mean, that's a whole model that's done really well and has a lower competition level or did than some of these others. So good valuations, you know, and a lot of upside. Mm-hmm. Content is generally what we say is a combination between display ads or affiliate marketing. So top 10 travel backpacks, you click on one of the backpacks, they get a commission for the affiliate link. Mm-hmm. Or if they have display ads on the site. Content and affiliate have been around forever and continue to be a really strong monetization for the operators that know it well, have good teams in place, can crank mm-hmm. out quality content. So those are the ones we've done so far. We are planning to roll out our first SaaS, so software as a service operator, later this year. So we're pretty excited about that as well.
Okay, so currently you've got round 1, 2, and 3 that are operating. Round 3 is just starting to cash flow. Is there a round 4 and future rounds planned in the immediate future? Or where do things currently stand?
Yeah, so round 4 has completed acquisitions and they are basically what we call like migration and stabilization period. So they'll start mm-hmm. cash flowing very soon. Round 5 is doing acquisitions right now. I think there's been 3 or 4 businesses purchased in round 5. So that'll go on for another 45 days or so. And then they'll start migration.
That's the purchasing or are you still raising funds for that?
Yeah, purchasing.
Okay. So that one's capital is fully allocated or not fully allocated, but fully raised.
Yep, exactly. Fully raised. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure on the percentage deployed, but large percentage deployed, I think 60 or 70%. So we will be doing our next round 6 later this year. And that will include, like I said, that should include our first SaaS operator as well as some content operators and maybe FBA as well. I'm not sure.
So how excited are you about the first of something? You know, like I'm sure you guys are excited about it, but as an investor, do we want to be the first into the SaaS?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, we're excited about it because of this particular portfolio's manager. His track record's very good. Mm-hmm. But as an investor, you should definitely do your own due diligence. You'll see his track record, the sites he's built, or that, you know, softwares that he's built. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of need to decide for yourself. But again, if you're going to come in and do a first, you should do an invest in all and not just pick one fund.
Oh, right. So round 6 is going to have a SaaS fund, but then it'll probably also have something like an FBA fund and a content fund. Is that determined yet?
Yeah, I don't know that's fully determined yet. They're in the application process now, but mm-hmm. yeah, that's a pretty safe bet that it'll include at least one of each of the others.
That's pretty, that sounds like a cool fund. So it'd be SaaS, FBA and content. What's the minimum mm-hmm. and max investment in this round?
I don't think we've determined it for that round yet. Generally, mm-hmm. the invest in all is like about 60,000. Mm-hmm. So if there's 4 funds, that would get you 15,000 in each of the 4, something like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. With around maybe if you were to just choose one, like 25,000. So again, you're incentivized to invest in all versus just choosing one.
Is that minimum or is that the max? Or is that just like everyone needs to invest that same amount?
That's minimum.
Okay.
And then generally there's some incentives if you get over 100 or over a certain amount. We haven't set a max. We wouldn't allow somebody to come in and take down a whole fund themselves at this point. Yeah. But we've had upwards of, you know, 500,000 or so invested.
Oh, wow. That's significant. Is this all individuals or are there also in like institutional or corporate investors that are in this as well?
Yeah. So we've had some interest from institutional type investors. We haven't brought any on yet. They were wanting to see a bit more of a track record, which we're starting to build up.
Yeah.
But we have had people pull together money. You can invest through an LLC,
right.
You know, with others. We've had people invest through their IRAs. We've had people invest through trusts and things like that. So it doesn't have mm-hmm. to be just an individual investment. There's, you know, we can take it from many different channels.
Yeah. That's a pretty big check, 500K. That's a lot of confidence. And especially like you guys have been operating in this for 2 years. So it's probably somebody that has gotten familiar with you guys over the much longer period that Empire Flippers has been operating.
Yeah, exactly.
I've gotten some emails recently about the direct opportunity to invest in WebStreet. And I know we're not specifically talking about that on this episode, but maybe we can just touch on it. Like what's the opportunity there? I think like I got my first email maybe a week ago or something. So it seems like it's relatively new.
Yeah. So we were doing a short basically in June and July of 2023, allowing investors to invest directly in WebStreet. Mm-hmm. So rather than owning a part of one of the funds or multiple funds, you can actually own a piece of the company. This is one thing that Empire Flippers never did. They grew kind of bootstrapped in a slower manner, you know, which turned out to be very successful. But we're planning to grow much quicker. And we know somebody's going to get this model right We want to grow mm-hmm. a strategic moat. You know, we're standalone small team now, similar structure to EF, but we've got a custom tech platform. We need to grow our investor base. We need to continue to attract the top PMs. So we're raising capital where you can own an equity share in Web Street. Mm-hmm. So that'll go on for, you know, till about the end of July or so. And yeah, that's essentially the opportunity. It's a little bit different. It's not mm-hmm. like the normal rounds I would call an income type investment, yeah. you know, cash flowing income. This is mm-hmm. more of a growth investment. So, you know,
Is this an equity investment or is it like a convertible note? Do you know how the structure of it is?
It is. Yeah. It's an equity. You own shares in the company.
Okay. And if people want to find out more about that specifically, where can they go?
So webstreet.co.co. And you can just go to funds and there's mm-hmm. On there, you can look at fund 8026 and all the details are there. You will need to make an account. It only takes about 30 seconds. And, you know, there's a lot more information on there that I can't go into for SEC and other regulation purposes, but definitely encourage you to check that out and reach out to our team. Yeah, it's a pretty unique opportunity to own a piece of the company.
Okay. So that's 8026 and that's just visible as a fund alongside the other funds. It was just a totally different type of opportunity or investment.
Correct. But it's the only one on there right now as we gear up for mm-hmm. round six. So it's, okay. yeah, it's the only one you'll see on there.
So one thing, I'm not sure if you've seen the recent news. There's a 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's called Pier Street. They have been one of our favorite alternative investments. We've had the guys on Brett and Brew at least two times, and they actually hosted us out in California very graciously for Invest Like a Boss meetup. I don't know, sorry, Invest Like a Boss summit that we held back just before COVID. I had an amazing time with them and the team at their headquarters. So very, you know, sad and you know, struck just by the fact that they're gone bankrupt. And news just broke basically a week ago, and it's kind of sent major rattles through the alternative investments because we kind of realized, like, at the end of the day, you know, how many of us actually check the underwriting of a lot of these investments? And, you know, we're ultimately investing in the case of Pier Street, like a seed round startup to manage, you know, to manage the money that we're lending to these deals. Now, I think everything will turn out fine with Pier Street. The reason it was like real shaky in the beginning is like they just went bankrupt and someone posted in Boss Lounge that there was like some news article, but Pier Street never actually made an announcement. And so everyone's like, you know, WTF, like you even log into your Pier Street account, you see nothing about it. And all you do is see that your account's frozen. Like you can't withdraw money or deposit money. You have cash balance there. And so it comes to be that I think they had some type of like gag order where they can't actually talk about it. We did some kind of crowd due diligence and it looks like the underwriting is okay, but you know, time will tell, right? But I think the point is like now I think there's gonna be a much more lens around like what's the structure of these investments. And this is a question that we asked like Fundrise originally when we interviewed them and Pier Street and some of the other ones, is like, what happens if you get nuclear bombed? What happens if you cease to operate? What happens with the investments? So I think this is going to become a much more broad topic with people looking at some of these new investments. I wanted to see if you guys had a chance, if you could address their comment on that in terms of the structure of the investment of these rounds and what would happen in the unfortunate scenario that Web Street was to stop operating at some point.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. First of all, yeah, it's very sad. I saw a bit about this, but I also tried to dig into it just like you were saying and figure out mm-hmm. what their structures were. And there wasn't much information out there.
Yeah.
I haven't invested through Pier Street, but I have in other similar platforms. So it definitely got me a little bit worried as well.
Yeah.
As far as Web Street, if we were to shut our doors or whatever the term would be, under no circumstance would something happen where the funds would stop operating or investor funds would be lost. So all our funds are individual LLCs that are run by the portfolio managers and that investors own a portion of. Mm-hmm. So every one of them is a separate LLC. Those would continue to operate. The same operating agreements are in place. And so that means based on the operating agreements, the profit splits are in place. The plan to sell the businesses are in place. So if we never raised another fund again, all the funds that we've raised so far would continue to operate as is with the same operating agreements until they're exited. And then that would be the end of that.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So I think in the case of Pier Street, what it looks like is going to happen is they might have to bring in some type of third party, like custodian or management company that will see through the loans until they're paid out. And then they'll liquidate what's remaining and give it out to investors. So it sounds like it would be the same situation with you guys, where for some reason Web Street was to stop operating, the underlying assets and managers could still be in place. And then you might just need a third party management company to basically liquidate the assets and then pay out the investors.
Yeah, well, and you have to remember too, the operators, the PMs, I mean, their money is still in it as investors as well. So they would have a vested interest in continuing to run those businesses and sell them at the right time. So imagine we would continue to distribute through our platform and then continue when the businesses are exited, distribute the profits accordingly as well.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. And thanks for shedding light on that. I think this is an important conversation. There's so many people that are digging for information right now. And I think Pure Street, depending on how that gets wound up, will either rattle things in the alternatives much further or shed a lot of confidence on it as well. Like if things get handled, I think right now there's $250 million outstanding with Pure Street in terms of loans, and that's across 11,000 accounts. So the average investor has something like 20,000, which is not the massive sum of money, but it's a lot of people affected, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's one other thing I didn't really touch on either is, I mean, I don't know completely Pure Street's model, but you know, we don't have any debt. So ours are all, you know, we've put investors' capital to work. We don't leverage up their capital to purchase, you know, with debt or anything like that. So yeah. I think it's a little bit cleaner.
Well, also, like, I think I have something, I'm an investor in Pure Street. I have something like, I don't know, 150 loans still outstanding, you know, that can take a long time to wind up. It's also super diversified, but it can take, I mean, who knows? It could take years to wind up, right?
Right, right.
And I guess with your guys' fund, if there's only three or four assets in it, like if something did happen to sell three or four assets, you would want to get the timing right so you don't lose on those assets, but it's not 150 different things that you have to wind up.
No, exactly.
Okay. So just let's finish by kind of touching on round six. So you said that's coming out. Round five's done. Round four is in the books. Round five's done. Round six is coming up sometime the end of the year. Sounds like it's going to be SaaS, FBA, and content. Do you have any idea of when you'll start allowing investors to invest?
Yeah. So we always give early access to our previous investors. So those of you that have invested with us before, I'd be on the lookout maybe mid-August, something like that, with us opening, you know, our wait list into the public, you know, maybe in early September or something like that. So we're in the works now of getting all the PMs finalized, the structure, the minimums. You know, that's one thing that's important too when we do these rounds. We want each round to be very diversified. So we don't want to have or FBA funds in a round. So that's another thing with the PM selection. We may want an operator that's applied now, but he may need to wait 6 months for an additional round or something like that. So we're in the middle of doing all that structure now, and probably in August, September, we'll be opening up.
Okay, great. So that'll be for people that are already invested with you guys, they're kind of get early access. For anyone who hasn't invested through you guys yet, what's your recommendation? Should they make accounts or join a mailing list?
Yeah, I would definitely go ahead and make an account, webstreet.co. And you can click either learn more or get started in the top right. 30 seconds, make a quick account, and then you'll be on our mailing list, and we'll keep you updated there.
Sounds great. Where are you going to be for the remainder of the year? Be in Georgia?
I'll be in Georgia. I think I'm going to make it out. One of our team members is going to get married in Egypt in October. So I'm going to head out there. I just got back from a month in Europe as well, near your parts there in Barcelona. And so yeah, enjoying the States for the summer, and then get back on the road.
Oh, great, man. A wedding in Egypt sounds like a blast.
Yeah, we're distributed just like EF, and we get together once or twice a year for company meetups. And this one's probably not going to be official, but we're going to make it a stopping point for sure.
Hey, congratulations on everything you guys have done over it's been 7 or 8 years since we've been talking to you about it. You guys have been operating much longer, and quite an evolution of the company and some great track record, especially early on in these funds during what's been a very chaotic couple of years in technology, which I know, you know, the funds aren't strictly technology, but they certainly rhyme with it and touch it. And the fact that they've been generating those type of cash on cash returns over the last couple of years, I think is really impressive and sheds a lot of confidence on what you guys have done. So excited to see how round six turns out, and we'll keep all of our listeners updated when that stuff starts to materialize.
Sounds great, Sam. Yeah, I appreciate it. And you guys keep on doing what you're doing. Maybe we'll be back on in another 2 or 3 years for an update.
I think it'll definitely be due by that time. All right, Kyle. All right. Thanks, man. We'll catch you soon.
See ya. Thanks.
All right, Sam. So I have one question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to participate in the next round?
I'm really thinking about it, man. I'm really thinking about it. I've had this mission to start consolidating my accounts, which lo and behold, I got my wish because it doesn't look like I'll have a Pier Street account coming up. And as soon as Yield Street figures out what that one fund is, I'll be out of that account. And then I just moved over. I had an account with UBS, which is like a brokerage account, which I literally just have four index funds in. And I'm like, no reason to have this. So I initiated a transfer of those funds into my Vanguard account. They're not actually Vanguard funds. They're iShares funds, but Vanguard account can hold them. So boom, I'll have three less accounts now. And this is something that is so interesting. It's like I invest so much in technology, you know, mm-hmm. in startups and especially publicly traded stocks and publicly traded index funds. And as we know, those have all gotten hammered the last couple of years in sort of the tech implosion, the metaverse portfolio we've talked about so much. But the issue, like the main thing is like these don't yield. So when there's a 70% drawdown in your portfolio and they don't yield, it's just like, I mean, luckily I'm diversified, but it's not pleasant. Now think about this fund. Another way you can look at WebStreet's fund is like, it's like investing in an e-com ETF. Mm-hmm. That yields 15%, pays out a 15% dividend.
Yeah.
And they're all mm-hmm. individually cash flow positive businesses underneath that have continued to pay out and yield over the last couple of years while you're watching your metaverse portfolio tank 70%. Mm-hmm. So I think that's it's super appealing and it's proven itself to work in a variety of different markets. I mean, we weren't in a deep recession over the last couple of years, but just watching the performance of technology stocks and technology indexes and seeing that they've been able to pay out in their relatively young funds during that course of time, I think it's a big shot of confidence.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. As far as the 14%, there is a huge caveat there is mm-hmm. that is the combined, like if you had invested across all four funds, because some of them did a lot better. So for example, in the first four deals, right, there was three content sites, which are, you know, kind of advertising sites or affiliate sites. And then there was like the FBA mm-hmm. deals where they're actually selling physical products on Amazon. I purposely chose to only invest in Amazon FBA because that's actually something I wanted to get into as a business. And I just wanted some kind of exposure to it without me actually importing products from China and doing the work. I just kind of like the idea mm-hmm. of learning about it. So the FBA deals, none of them did very well. So I'm just looking at the first kind of like six funds. I mean, the first two rounds, the one I invested in, and one of them, the one I'm in, 8006, mm-hmm. Life to date has made 8.3%, and it's been more than 2 years. The other one, 8007, life to date has made 5.1%. But that one's a newer one. Maybe that one. That was part of round two. Sorry. So in mm-hmm. round one, the reason why you get a pretty good average is because the content sites did very well. Like life to date, mm-hmm. they made 23%. But the actual yearly yield, even for those, it was 7.4 for first quarter, 3.7, 2, and 2. So if you kind of average that out, that's not 23% for the year.
Let's say that's like eight, just shy of 8% on the year. But then looking at like, so these actually, if you look at them in detail, they vary pretty considerably. Then you have 8013, which is a content fund in the same round two. Mm-hmm. And that paid out Q2, 5%, Q3, basically 7%, Q4, 7%, and Q1, 10%. So that's over 20% that paid out. And so you see the averages here. Average of round two is 3%, 3.6%, 3.8%, 5%. So we're talking 9, 10, 15. Yeah, 15% last year was the average across round two. And it looks like 3, 9... just shy of that, about 13% was the average of round one. And then round three has only had two quarters that it's been paying out.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I was going to say, to be fair, when we had on the guys from Empire for Post Capital, they said, we recommend you diversify and invest across all four offerings. And they said that. They said, like, the way that this is going to work for you to get your best returns, you should definitely not pick and choose. You should just invest a little bit in all of them. And I actually tried to invest in both FBA deals. One actually kicked back and sent my money back because I think it didn't go through. So I ended up in just one. If I had invested in round two's FBA deal, which is 8007, that actually life to date is only paid out 5.1%. To be fair, it took a while for it to start cash flowing. So it's only started paying since Q3 2022. So it's only at two quarters basically to pay out. But even then, it doesn't make any sense because, three quarters. So Q2 2022, Q3, and then Q4. So life to date, it's been 5% return, 5.1. So if I hadn't invested in just the FBA deals, I wouldn't have made very much money so far.
Yeah. Well, it's the same old story. Diversify, diversify, diversify. It's like, I hate to bring up Pearshoot again, but I can remember like when we had them on the episode for the first time and they're like, don't even think about picking deals, like just diversify as broadly as possible. And what did I do? I set up my account and I'm like, yeah, this deal looks great. I'll put 20 grand into the one loan and that loan. And that loan
just happened too bad.
Yeah. For 3 years or something.
So, a couple of lessons learned with this. And I think we talked about we talked about this a few times, but the whole purpose of having these platforms where we can invest is to be able to very easily diversify our money. Because if we were going to start the business ourselves, or even if we were going to find property deals to finance, it would take 10 times longer for us to find 10 deals to invest in, which is why you would probably just invest in one. But because we have these platforms where with one click of the button, you can just say, spread my money out. And in this case, you can just sign one form, transfer the money one time. Why wouldn't we?
Yep. I like it a lot. I think this is, I feel like WebStreet, previously known as Empire Capital, is the first one to really do this. Like, I remember talking to Joe originally before this was ever even set up. This goes back 7 years ago or something. He's like, it's really hard to like put this together, which is why it doesn't exist yet, like across these type of digital sites. I don't know if that's still the case. If there's other competitors, you know, of anyone else that set up a fund like this?
I haven't heard of anything. I mean, I do know people do invest in people's projects, and I've been tempted to, because I know a lot of guys who have made lots of money with the FBA, and every time they exit, they make, $1 million from it. I'm like, hey, if you want, I can jump in on the next one with you. but you realize, things change, like like Amazon has gone saturated over the years. I don't think Amazon is going to be or should be the number one go-to place for everyone to buy everything, for in the US forever,
Well, you remember, I haven't followed it as much, but Amazon affiliate used to be like the biggest affiliate program in the world. It probably still is, but they were paying out like really good commissions that were making sites independently wealthy. And then all of a sudden overnight, they're like, we're going to cut our affiliate payouts by 80% or something.
Yeah, something insane. Yeah, something really insane.
Yeah. And so people had spent their lives a decade building a site predicated on Amazon affiliate network. And then you don't control those terms,
Exactly. So what I do like about being part of this deal is it's like I've, silently invested in a physical products business. What I actually should do is I actually should just order some of these products that we sell myself just to have it, because it'd be kind of cool to actually own the thing I'm invested in. I won't say what they are because, it is a kind of a protected niche, but there's something, that I can put in my home that I'd be like, oh, this is something I can just look at and be like, you know what? This thing is being sold to hundreds or thousands of people, and it's making me money.
That's cool. So because obviously from what we see here on the portfolio overview, we don't see the sites that are in it. But I guess as an investor, they would share the details of what sites and assets are actually in the fund,
exactly.
Right?
I mean, I can go to the listing. I can read the reviews. Some of them have the one I'm looking at right now is 3,000 plus four-star reviews. So it's one of those things where, none of the reviews are just five stars across the board. It's not like the best product in the world. But I think what it is they figure out what sells decently well, that's like a decent price that we can get a four-star review for, that we can just make some money on. Like, just do that.
Yeah. Now, I would love to see how these funds stack up against like a comparison chart against investing in real estate. I think if you invested if this was as easy as it seems to invest in, and they can establish a longer term track record on this, because it is only a couple of years, right? This would be like the perfect two asset portfolio aside from your stocks. It's like real estate in basically some type of web business.
Yeah.
But very diversified, right? I would not ever be in just one site or even one fund. I like the idea of being across an entire round, get content, get FBA, get software as a service, et cetera.
That is very smart. That is definitely the way to do it.
Yeah.
That being said, I am excited to look into investing in the next round, and I would only pick one. There's only one thing I'm excited about.
Wait a second. Well, what were we talking about on the episode? We talked about content, FBA, and SaaS.
And also KDP, if you forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Direct publishing.
I don't think you're interested in SaaS. So which one is it?
Okay, so KDP is the one I think is actually going to fail because it's so easy to use ChatGPT to write books now. I think it's going to flood the market for Kindle Direct Publishing. Fun fact is, I actually have two books on Amazon. If you search Johnny FD, you can read my books. And it took me months to write those. Now with ChatGPT, I could probably have that, you know, published out like in a few hours. So I think that's going to get flooded. So maybe some of these people, if that's their model, maybe they can make a lot of money. So if that's like, if I'm reading, that's what they're doing, you know, maybe I'll invest in them. But if someone's writing traditionally or hiring people to ghostwrite, I think they're going to get screwed. For Amazon FBA, this is kind of I'm hoping Amazon dies as a business in the next few years, or at least gets small, because I hate the fact that everyone orders so much kind of subpar crap from China, from Amazon. And just, it's just like, it's just
wait a second, Johnny, before you finish that sentence, like right when we got on this recording, before we started recording this episode, we turned the videos on and Johnny's like, nice robe. I'm like, yeah, I just bought it on Lazada, which is like kind of cheaper version of Amazon for Asia.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it was $4.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, and I miss the old mom and pop shops. I miss like brands and stuff like that. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah. But imagine you have Amazon taken away from you, man. You'll just be like, I miss that.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'd rather everyone just go to Costco and Best Buy and Target again. Like the good old days. But anyways.
I have to work to buy things, you mean?
Yeah. So FBA, not excited. I'm glad I'm in this deal. Just kind of see how it went, how it works. But, you know, I don't have any FOMO with that. What was the third category?
Content.
I actually thought it was on the way out because, you know, I have a blog. I used to make a lot of money from affiliate links. When Amazon slashed those the commissions, as you mentioned, that destroyed a lot of it. But it kind of, in general, people don't read blogs as much anymore as they used to. They're being flooded now by these ghostwritten sites, the top 10, you know, like the top 10 mattresses, top 10 backpacks, whatever. And they make money. I see why. Because sometimes, like when I was looking for a mattress, I couldn't find a normal trustworthy site. I just find these like content sites that link me back to Amazon and link me somewhere else. So I understand they make money. I want those to die as well. Like I think it's ruined the internet. I know why they make money, you know, because most people can't tell the difference, but that's not something I want to survive. So the one that I would invest in is the one that you discredited, and we thought I definitely wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I love software as a service. I just didn't think it was like your thing.
It's not interesting to me at all to build, but it's something that I've always wished I could have invested in because I know they make money. And I understand they're kind of, you know, once people sign up, they don't cancel.
That's right. They're sticky. It's a long sales cycle. It sucks as a business. And that's why you want to invest and not run it. Every time I've done a software as a service business, I'm like, B2B sales is so terrible. Like compared to B2C, B2C, you can have access to the entire world in like 3 days. And you don't have to talk to anyone. You just have a good like landing page and buy now button. But with B2B, like think of this. If you want to sell a product to a company for like $20 a month, right? You often have to get like 3 people to say yes to that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, it's so stupid. It's like, it's such a tiny purchase. Like, oh, well, I have to get approvals for anything we buy to buy with something with a credit card and put it on like auto build. You have to talk to 3 people to sell that same product to someone, an individual for $20. It's nothing. It's literally like a 5-second decision for that person.
Yep.
You know?
But that's exactly why I like SaaS businesses. I've always been jealous. That's something that I couldn't do myself or wasn't willing to do myself.
Yeah.
So that's exactly the reason why when he mentioned that SaaS investments are coming up, my ears perked up.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, I know people that all they will do is B2B SaaS. They love it because they love that barrier to entry, and they love the relationship side of it. It's like, hey, once we get them on, you know, we got them 10 years, like data shows it.
And I think aside from listeners of this podcast, I think most people will look at that and just skip it, be like, that's boring.
Yeah.
Or I don't understand
it. And the content one's interesting too, because like that game is always changing. Mm-hmm. And content sites like blogs, as you were saying before, I mean, they're very much, they live by the sword, die by the sword. And that's Google's SEO algorithm, mm-hmm. right? Like if it's, they change it, and sometimes they change it, and all they want to do, Google rewards the big portals, like the major content sites like TripAdvisor, et cetera. And sometimes they start pushing up the more the small micro sites that are very focused and niche. But that's another scary thing. And also now with ChatGPT and just the ability to publish content so quick, you know, it's both a blessing and a curse to content sites. Because if you're playing that game and you have a good strategy, you can publish content like crazy right now. But if you're not, anybody can come in and write like a massive, massive publishing site like in a couple of days, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, it hasn't actually happened yet, but if people start using like Bing search, you're going to have these snippets where ChatGPT or their version of AI is just going to tell you the answer. You're never going to go to the page or click a link.
That's a good point. And at some point, like a ChatGPT is going to be able to just, like a Bing or ChatGPT or whatever search engines are built off of this, are going to be able to give you the content of that blog that you don't have to click through and read some independent published. You're just going to trust the AI to give you the better answer.
Yeah. So, you know, exciting times ahead. Let's definitely revisit this in 2 or 3 years, see how these investments do, especially if we end up investing in SaaS. Check out our upcoming quarterly update where Sam and I talk about everything we invest in every single quarter. And you might see a little SaaS investment in there for one of us.
Yeah, cool. Well, you're in line, I guess, because you're already invested with WebStreet. So you'll get first crack at it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to circle back around to Kyle and see if I can...
Maybe I'm going to put a whole 500K in there, just
cut the line,
flood it. I'm like, I'll buy the whole investment out.
Johnny's 100% in Kharkiv property and a brand new SaaS fund.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I need. All right. Well, good talking to you.
Thanks, yeah. And thanks, Kyle, for coming on the show. WebStreet and Empire Flipper has been on now, and consecutive. It's been a long running dialogue that we've had with them back since early 2016. So it's fun to stay on top of the trends and what's happening with them over there.
Yeah. So congrats on the rebrand, and we'll see how it all goes. See you guys in the next one.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.